It's 8 o'clock. This is KBNF Regional News for Thursday, May 7th. I'm Patricia Naft. Colorado will soon have a felony DUI law on the books. On the final day of the legislative session, the Senate passed a bill to create a felony DUI for habitual drunken driving offenders. Only a handful of states don't have a felony DUI law. The Class 4 felony would apply to people after three or more prior DUI convictions. According to a legislative analysis of the measure, the state had 24,124 DUI cases last year. Governor John Hickenlooper called for the bill to become a law during his State of the State address. It now heads to his desk for signing. Every 2 years, all property in Colorado is assessed. Counties across the Western Slope sent out letters to property owners recently, informing them of their current valuation. In Delta, Mesa, San Miguel, and Ouray counties, assessors are seeing a little bit of a mixed bag, but overall things are looking good. Brad Hughes is the Montrose County assessor. He also says things are looking up. Residential properties increased in value on average by 10%. Things are even better for agricultural land.
Yeah, agricultural land, it's valued based on an income capacity for the land itself. And it's done on a 10-year average of commodity prices. And so two previous low commodity price years were removed, and the two more recent commodity price years were added, and that resulted in a substantial increase in the overall value per acre for irrigated land.
Irrigated land is up in Montrose County by an average of 22%. The good news isn't seen everywhere across the county, though.
The west end of Montrose County has such a small valuation in comparison to the entire county that it's kind of its own separate entity. And so looking at it, there weren't near the increases in values. Most of our West End properties actually did decrease in value.
Still, though, numbers on average are up for Montrose County and others on the Western Slope. Hughes says that the area has seen serious improvement since the deepest low of the housing crash, but it's still a long way from its previous peak. Spring is in full effect, and for quite a while, birds have been migrating through the area. KVNF's Jake Ryan has more.
One listener, Marilyn Stone, commented on the IC Change website that she noticed, for the first time this year, a Bullock's Oriole and a hummingbird. She wasn't positive which species. I brought the observation to Jeff Byrek, a biologist with the Rocky Mountain Bird Observatory.
Hey, Marilyn. It's probably a black-chinned hummingbird that you did see. They do like to migrate through this area. However, we also have a breeding hummingbird that spends its time throughout the summer here, and that's called the broad-tailed hummingbird. And those ones can be difficult to tell apart, but it could be one of those species. And Bullock's Oriole both migrates through here and breeds in the state of Colorado as well. Bullock's Orioles tend to like riparian areas, that is, areas along river.
He says that this is a pretty normal time to see them around here. The warm spring may have thrown off the fruit trees in the area, but birds aren't as easily confused.
Generally, the big thing that triggers birds to start to migrate is the change in day length that naturally happens throughout the northern hemisphere. As birds start to detect that they're having these longer day lengths, they have a hormonal change in their body that causes them to start exhibiting migratory behavior and eventually leave for their breeding grounds.
Byrek says that Colorado is currently in a big migratory wave as more larks and sparrows make their way through the state. Colorado, he says, it's fortunate that it's visited by birds from the east and the west. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
If you've noticed signs of spring or signs of summer, let us know at icchange.org. Oil production has boomed in Colorado. As a result, energy companies are paying more in severance taxes, money they pay the state for taking minerals out of the ground. Half of it is supposed to go back to local communities, both directly and through grants. But as Benta Berkland reports in a first story in a series of three on severance tax, it's not always a stable source of funding.
Like many communities, Trinidad relies on severance taxes. City leaders use the money to shore up their annual budget, and the Southern Colorado City is using nearly $2 million in energy impact grants to revitalize the red brick streets in their historic downtown.
The next line's under you, right? Let's try it. If not, we'll get the hammer.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa.
Public Works Director Mike Valentine is overseeing the project. He calls the tax money a godsend.
We were impacted by the energy companies going strong and heavy with, you know, with all the trucks, and the town had to keep up with that. And now the coal mine is shut down and the gas field is kind of slowed down. They're no longer drilling. We were impacted by the loss of employment.
The hope is updating the downtown will attract more tourists.
The brick streets are a draw. People actually come to Trinidad just to see the brick streets and the historic structures. We hope to enhance it so that they remember us and come back and tell their friends.
The Colorado Department of Local Affairs distributes the competitive energy impact grants. They were suspended during the recession, but according to data from Rocky Mountain PBSI News, more than 500 statewide projects have been funded since they resumed in 2013. Cities and towns with the most energy production typically get the most grant money, according to program supervisor Chantal Unfug. Even areas with little energy production can still qualify as long as they can match the amount of the grant on their own.
Our department feels strongly that every community across Colorado is impacted in some way, whether it's historic or it's current.
Even though lots of communities use the grants, the pool of money varies from year to year because severance taxes are directly tied to energy production. The taxes are also a prime target for lawmakers when it comes to backfilling the budget. Communities played along during the recession, but now that the economy is recovering,
it's got to stop. It has to stop because those impacts, they don't get done and you just push it off to another day.
Kevin Balmers with the Colorado Municipal League, which lobbies for cities across the state. When the legislature wanted to divert $20 million to the state's general fund from this year's higher-than-anticipated severance tax revenue, CML was opposed to it. Democratic Joint Budget Committee member Senator Pat Stedman supported the transfer.
Given the spike in severance tax, you have to acknowledge, I think, that it plays some role in the fact the state owes a Tabor refund of the magnitude that we do.
The Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, or Tabor Amendment, mandates that Colorado's budget can't increase by more than inflation plus population growth. Any extra money must be refunded to voters. By taking the $20 million, the state was able to shore up other parts of the budget that are tighter because of Tabor. Republican Representative John Becker of Fort Morgan voted against the plan, calling it bad policy.
Severance tax has always been a huge ebb and flow, depending on, obviously, what the energy industry is doing. I don't think we should get into relying on this as anything that should balance the budget. I think that that's a dangerous precedent.
Governor John Hickenlooper has even gotten into the discussion about severance taxes as part of a larger plan to make changes to Tabor and the way lawmakers craft the annual budget, something that could be even harder next year, with the severance tax fund expected to drop by more than 60%, driven by lower oil prices. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Stay tuned for the sweet sound. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.